Here comes the terrible song again on the radio.
But I gotta admit, I kinda really like it. Why can't I let it go?
So in defense of lost causes, defense of lost causes show.
With Rebecca
and Brian
and a whole bunch of wreckers, we'll tell you what we know. We're not raucous
or pompous, we don't hold any office. We're just here in defense of lost causes. A defense of lost causes show.
I've been defense of lost causes. It's been a very long time.
Sorry, some of us over here were busy becoming teachers and doing homework. And
it's true. I had so much homework in the last couple of weeks. It was ungainly, unseemly.
So now we've got time for podcasts again.
Yes. Another thing that was causing a bit of a delay is we were wondering where we wanted to go topically next. And we came up with something that we wanted to try. There's a big event album.
And these don't happen very much anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Not the way they used to. So this was like the event album of 2011, and we wanted to respond to it spontaneously. So neither of us have heard it before, and we're going to listen to it together and, I guess, record our reactions to it. And that is going to take up the entirety of this episode of IDOLC. And what is that record?
That record is the Jay-Z Kanye collaboration.
Watch the Throne.
Watch the Throne.
Watch the Throne.
So those of you also intrigued like we are by what happens when two hip-hop giants come together, stay tuned for an hour of us jabbering about it. Those of you that are not into hip-hop or already made up your mind about this album, which seems to sort of be every person in my Twitter feed. You know, as a side note, Brian and I made a pact that we were not going to read any reviews. We were not going to... My entire Twitter feed for like a week has been nothing but people pointing to reviews or retweeting other people's pointing to reviews. And it's been very hard to avoid, but we have tried. I think we have succeeded.
And coming into this, the only song that either of us have heard any of before was Otis, because that was released as a single prior to release of the album.
Yeah.
So I've heard that. You've probably heard it a few more times than I have, because I've only heard it the once, really.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've been listening to
You've
that
been getting
song,
down to
and,
it?
Yeah, and the recent Aziz Ansari video also.
Yeah.
Which, if you haven't seen, you should definitely check out.
And it makes sense that you would be all over Otis, since it is prominently sampling your favorite song.
It's true. I did. Brian has been, if any of you follow him on Facebook, Brian has been counting down his top 200 songs of all time for like a year now.
Yeah.
And he's down to like the 30s. But we did have a discussion about like, oh, Brian, what's your number one? And I won't ruin his number one here, but it made me think about, God, like there's so many bands that I love and so many things that I was like obsessed, so obsessed with, I didn't listen to anything else for a period of time. But if I'm honest with myself, like the best pop song of all time is "Try a Little Tenderness," as far as I'm concerned.
And what I and you hinted at something that I've been thinking about through my whole list is a lot of things are on there because it reminds me very much of a specific moment in my life or a specific period of time when I really liked that thing, and I might still feel affectionately towards it, but I don't listen to it that much anymore. So I was thinking, like, what could I listen to in any mood at any time and still feel some sort of, you know, butterflies in my stomach about?
And that is your secret number one, which will hopefully be revealed, you know, by the end of this year.
Yeah, even though I've been, it's been slow going the last month or so.
It's okay.
It's taken me like 2 months to get from 40 to 30.
There were some good picks, though, but that's how I feel about Try a Little Tenderness. Like,
yeah. So as far as background for this album, as far as what these two artists have done separately of late, so Kanye's last record was the first one of his that I thought deserved to be called a genius, brilliant album.
Now, I'm a huge Kanye fan, and so I basically stand by that, genius album. For I think all of his albums have been great in different ways, but there's no doubt in my mind that My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is the best thing he's ever released. It's the most ambitious. It's not just the most ambitious Kanye record, which is saying something because he's a pretty ambitious producer himself. But it was the most ambitious record that came out last year.
Yeah.
And not just in the way that it's produced, but in the way that he's rapping. You know, I think forever the criticism of Kanye was like, yeah, he's a great producer. He's a fine rapper. And I think he finally proved that he was like a legitimate...
Hits the high marks on both categories.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think that... That aside from the music contained within, you know, my Brian bought me for my birthday this year the vinyl version of that record, and the design is beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, end to end, no one else last year tried as hard as Kanye did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wrote a lot about that, especially the trying aspect, in my Tiny Mixtapes year end. But that was like. That's old news. So we don't need to talk about that. But so yeah, Kanye's coming off like, I think, the best work of his career.
Yeah.
You think the best work of his career.
Agreed.
A lot of people think so too. Jay-Z's most recent album is still Blueprint 3.
Yeah.
Which was a good record and one that, you know, spawned, you know, his comeback is sort of complete and he's with a number one single again in Empire State of Mind. But the album was also a bit of a lightning rod because of Sasha Frere Jones's review of it, in which he postulated the death of hip hop in 2009. And you know, there will be a critic who says hip hop is dead or rock is dead every like couple years or so, and then everyone has to respond to it. So that's what it was over the Blueprint 3 that most recently came down in hip-hop.
And now, I mean, not that I think that we should go into Watch the Throne thinking that it is a competition between the two
guys.
I think it's very much, or again, haven't heard it, I'm hoping it's very much a collaboration and two guys being like, we're at the top of our game, look what happens when we combine forces instead of... go against each other, which has sort of been the hip-hop tradition, right? It's all about, like, beef and...
Yeah, a lot of times. Though, but, you know, they have history of collaboration that's way deeper than this.
No, absolutely.
Like, Kanye West was one of the many producers who Jay-Z launched through, you know, because throughout Jay-Z's career, he's done a very good job of finding young, up-and-coming producers and making big names out of them. So he made a big name out of... the Neptunes. He made a big name out of Kanye. He made a big name out of Just Blaze. He made a big name out of Ninth Wonder. All of those were guys that he worked with while they were still up and coming. And Kanye was absolutely one of his launches.
Yes.
And so much of his last classic record, the Black Album, a lot of the best songs on that are Kanye beats.
Yeah, totally. What I was going to say is that I think I really like the Blueprint 3. I think it has great songs on it. It is by no means like Jay-Z's best album.
Right,
and not because of anything to do with the production or the song choice. Like I feel like he was always sort of known for having a very individual flow and like being a really creative rapper. And I feel like there's not a whole lot of creative
envelope pushing on his part.
So I'm interested to see what it's like when someone who can sort of rest on his laurels and do a good job.
Yeah.
And his protege, who's actually like firing on all cylinders flow wise for the first time ever, come together.
Yeah.
The one last thing I would like to say before we start playing the record is that I find it very confusing that this record is called Watch the Throne in the same year that Game of Thrones came. Like, why is everyone obsessed with thrones? I keep calling one the other and the other the other. Plus, all it makes me think of is toilets. Like, I feel like everyone is making records.
A giant toilet reference.
Yeah, toilet TV shows.
We're all on the shitter right now. Okay, well, here's our... Let's push play on this album.
Okay.
And we'll sit on our thrones. Our porcelain thrones. So let's pull a track listing up too. The name of this song is No Church in the Wild.
When things are fine, smiles for the king. What's the king to the guy? What's the guy to the guy?
is also featuring Frank Ocean.
Yeah, who is sort of the odd, the, like, future, odd future singing guy. The R&B arm of Odd Future.
The percussion on this is interesting. It seems like Jay-Z is still working in the late of his recent work, trying to use wordplay more than like flow or texture to try to get his point across. Beat wise, do you think this would sound in place or out of place on Twisted Fantasy?
Very much in place.
It feels of a mind to me.
I wanted to pull up the production list because I wanted to see, and it looks to me like on almost every song Kanye's getting at least partial production credit.
Filter sweeps, that's not a usual Kanye trick. I'm a sucker for those high cut filters. Do we think this is Kanye on the auto-tune, or Ocean?
Ocean.
Again, I'm really impressed with the percussive choices that Kanye made here. So this is like more impressionistic than I thought it would step up with. I would have thought that the first song on this record might be like a bombastic sort of announcement.
Right.
This seems more atmospheric. It's trying to set up a sort of harmonic space. Well, I mean, we'll see if it's like trying to set the mood or what. Because sometimes, you know, your banger is the second track.
And this album's second track does feature Mrs. Jay-Z. She's always good for a song.
Yeah. All right, here comes
Lift Off. Well, so far two songs in, I'm really impressed by the instrumental choices. Like, it's not all synthy. You know, it's neither the, like, the sort of bombast,
well,
like
here's
the Maybach. I like synths, don't get me wrong, but it's not like the Euro dance hip hop that has been so in vogue recently.
True.
Nor is it the, like, the Maybach music, like,
apocalypse, death, horror beats. Yeah.
I mean, to me, this all still sounds very much like the last Kanye record, like really instrumentally rich, really lots of depth with the synthesizers. Well, the production list for this one is Kanye, Jeff Asker, Mike Dean, Q-Tip, Pharrell, and Don Jazzy.
It's also in three, which you don't get that often in hip-hop. But yeah, there's a lot of like strings and low reeds, like bassoons and bass clarinets in here.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's very textured.
Yeah.
I like the treatment on his voice. Like, that doesn't sound like Kanye.
It's a mildly auto-tune.
Yeah.
It's a strange reference. He's got Otis on here. He's got Curtis Mayfield later. There was some Harold Melvin. Jay-Z hasn't really made his presence felt that much yet.
No. That's what I was going to say. You know, the last time you heard Jay-Z and Beyonce on a track together, it was like explosive.
Yeah.
And here he's sort of like laid back.
Yeah.
Not just in his flow, but like hanging back in his presence.
Well, and Beyonce there might as well be like the ocean of Bon Iver or whatever, you know. I don't think it's about her in this song.
No.
So far, it's like Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy Part 2, featuring Jay-Z on tracks.
Well, except it, and without even a whole lot of, like, impressive Kanye rap either. Like, it's instrumentally, production-wise, very much that record.
Yeah.
And I like how musical it is. I mean, Brian and I disagree all the time about, you know, Brian likes really spare tracks where there's no chorus and like someone just shows off what a great rapper they are. And I really like a sung hook. I really like a melodic sample.
Yeah.
All right, this is the toughest this record has sounded so far.
This is the kind of thing that I thought he would have done in the last, with a 6-8 beat, try to subdivide and rap quicker. Okay. I haven't heard him try that flow before. But that's the Houston cadence right there.
Yeah. I don't mean to be so quiet. I'm like trying to hear what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, this is an example of like the kind of spare beat that I like. There's a lot of space for the voice to take over.
Yeah, that's less my style.
Anchored by like just the thunderous little bass drums. I like those. It's a good joke to drop in there. Okay. This is, Kanye used this kind of thing on 808s.
Yeah.
The fuzzed out bass. It's kind of a weird, like, it's weird for them to have a
party. Oh, here comes my jam.
Yeah. That last song seems to be, like, the party pop-off song, which is just weird, because, like, what's Jay-Z going to show off about when he just, like, rapped with his wife, Beyoncé Knowles, like, the hottest woman in the world, on the last song? Like, my party is, I'm going to go home.
One of the things that I really like about this song is when Kanye first started, I think people were really, first they were really enamored of and then very quickly over his like sped up soul sample thing. But he picks not the hook of this to repeat. You know, he makes a sample out of the like least likely sample of the whole part of the song. And he uses that build to the chorus and then doesn't let you get there, is like...
it's an unresolved cadence kind of.
Yeah, which is like incredibly... it really grabs your attention for the lyrics because you're waiting for the resolution.
Some rappers sound better than others rapping against just another voice as a beat. I don't know that this is a great flow choice for Jay-Z. Like, some people talk to their samples. He's not talking to his sample.
No. Okay, now here's the thing. I get it. I mean, right, like, Jay-Z's, like, not a businessman. He's a businessman.
Right.
But... I was really hoping we would, and not believing.
We did just hear them self-reference, What More Can I Say, together.
Yeah, because I was wondering how long we were going to have to go in this record before the, like, luxury references started rolling.
Yeah.
Because they feel incredibly out of touch, considering that this record, like, dropped the week that, like, they had to resolve the debt ceiling crisis, yeah. And it's a little weird to feel like you kind of are living in the next Brazil.
Yeah.
And the people who should be speaking for the underclasses only just want to give you a list of, like, what they're driving.
Yeah, yeah. So this is Gotta Have It. This sounds like an early Kanye beat, except over time he's gotten more sophisticated with his low end, so it's like his drums and bass are on point with where they've been in the last couple years, but like the rest of this beat could have been off College Dropout.
Well, you know who his co-producer is on this?
Who?
The Neptunes.
Okay.
It interesting that they are rapping about LeBron James and D-Wade, considering
who did not
that,
win the championship.
Well, no, but to me, this album is sort of like the Miami Heat of records.
Sure.
Although I root against the Miami Heat because that feels like super stacked and uninteresting.
But
and
music,
I'm really rooting for this. That feels.
But you like supergroups in general.
I do. That's true.
Which is exactly what Miami Heat's about.
It just seems unfair in sports.
True.
It feels like, where's the fun in that?
Well, apparently having German seven-footers is how you deal with it. So who's the German seven-footer to this album?
I like can't even think of
it. Would be like Adele.
I was thinking you were meaning someone in hip-hop, like Lil Wayne.
I just mean like in pop right now. I don't know. It would be Adele.
People do love that record.
People love Adele.
If I never hear Rolling in the Deep again, it will be too soon.
Well, I liked that beat. I'm gonna have it. Here we have New Day.
Kanye made this with, among other people, RZA.
It's piano-y. I like my piano-driven beats.
There's a sample in
minor
here.
Key, chord,
I just can't
pianos.
Recognize what that sample is.
This is also, I like this use of auto-tune. I think it does something interesting with a voice that you couldn't just do by singing.
So this is a song about his future kid.
Hey, son. Strip club is not where to get love. Life lessons.
From dad.
From dad. Kanye
did your did your dad teach you that?
No. My dad has not expressed an opinion about strip clubs other than why.
It's interesting because Jay-Z and Kanye are the two rappers that every time we like talk about them, I'm always like, do they have kids? I'm like obsessed with knowing if they have kids. I guess they don't.
I do like this beat a lot. It is it eats up the scenery a bit though.
Yeah. I like that image of Jay-Z having a black bar mitzvah for his kid and giving him his first drink and being like, "You're a man now, Jay-Z Jr."
Get it? He repeated, "Never repeat him, never repeat him." I get it.
I kind of like how this is sentimental without being like mawkish or like, I think first of all it helps that they're talking about non-existent children. Like when you sing to your actual children it's a little too schmaltzy, but I think it like it's reflective in an internal way that's a nice contrast to what we've heard on the record so far. Plus, I'm sure people ask Jay-Z and Beyonce in every interview, like, when are they having babies?
And the answer is, Beyonce still got all those number one records to make. Who's got time? I feel like the next Kanye album is going to have no rapping and it's going to be like this the whole time. It's going to be like the Codas from Beautiful Dark and like that kind of thing. He'll just let them go and like have jam sessions with himself. He'll just like dub over and over. Alright, so this is called That's My Bitch.
Yeah, gotta tell you, already not liking the title. Yeah.
Once again, Kanye bringing the pitched percussion to the party. I like pitched percussion.
Yeah, me too.
It's a quote of a quote. This Public Enemy used that all the time.
Yeah. I like how this sounds referential to hip-hop history, like they're sort of paying homage to like the people that inspired them, but because of the like buzzy synthy low end of the side, like sounds unmistakably modern. Like,
and it's funny
that just
it
sounds about Basquiat.
I think he did.
So that's the next level of luxury for rappers. Like, first it's about, like, oh my god, my jewelry. Then it's, like, my fucking cars. And then it's, like, look at my art collection. Like,
yeah. Oh, but the funny thing about, like, the fuzzy low end being, you know, unmistakably modern, which I agree it is that it's unmistakably modern in music because those are, like, video game sounds. It's 8-bit, you know, like, the whole craze of like bands that cover video game music or like compete in using actual 8-bit music processors to like try to generate music. And it's clear to me that like Kanye is at least somewhat involved in that bit crunching.
Well, I think one of the things that you can tell about, much like you were saying that Jay-Z has had like a phenomenal track record for seeking out talent. I mean, I guess when you're at the top of your game, you can afford the top talent as your production staff.
Not to interrupt, but the thing that's been good is that he's found them before they were top talent, and like where he could have just rested on his like went and found the most expensive people of the day. He was forward looking usually.
Right. But I was going to say, I think Kanye is very immersed in pop culture. And like, I think if you went through his record collection, it wouldn't just be hip hop. Or like, you looked through his iPod.
Absolutely.
And
he also strikes me as someone who, like, Jay-Z's music is very much about translating his life story to, like, this art form that gels with him. But it's like, it's his way of getting out his life story, whereas I think with Kanye, like, his life story is about records. you know, to
well,
some
degree.
Well,
that's the thing that I've always really liked about Kanye is that he never pretended that he was anything other than what he was. So, like, yeah, he was a kid who, like, dropped out of college, and but he came from, like, a middle-class family, and, like, he didn't pretend that he was tough. And so what's the second part of your story? Well, the second part of his story is that he was a young phenomenon as a producer and, you know, made money and became famous. And, like, that's what he rapped. Like, almost more than any other rapper, I am kind of okay with him rapping about, like, how famous he is or how lucky we are that he showed up to our party.
Yeah.
Because, like, before his story was... I was gonna go to college, like, my mom wanted me to go to college, I dropped out of college, stuff about my family, and now his life is this.
Yeah. So this is Welcome to the Jungle.
Gotta like anyone that can name a song after a Guns N' Roses song.
We're still in pretty, like, impressionistic territory musically. Like, I haven't heard any anthems yet.
I think it's interesting, and I think this has sort of been a part of Kanye's rap for a really long time. Even though there's a lot of bravado and braggadocio, and, like, and it's, you know, it follows in, it has its place in hip-hop history of, like, boasting and showing your place and your status. There's so much talking about, like, being depressed and, like, like, one's inner feelings. Like, it's very emo. Like, that last song just found both of them being like, I pray so hard, like, I'm depressed, I can't, mama, why was your son born? Like,
well, but it is something that you get, like, it, on a lot of rap albums, there'll be the one song, like, is it sustainable to live this way? Or, like, how is this okay? Like, you know, there's always a song that's like, how did I get here? What is this life I'm living? Does this make any sense? Am I gonna die tomorrow?
Now, perhaps I'm not listening closely enough, though, but that last song, no one talked about why they were depressed. No one, like, talked about specific problems. Even if those problems are rich people problems. Like, like in the other song where he was like, oh, I feel bad for my kid because the paparazzi is going to chase him. Yeah. Like, that's a legitimate, yet rich person problem.
And we're back to more 8-bit space.
Is this Who Gonna Stop Me?
Vocally, that could have been a Diddy Dirty Money.
That's sad.
This. The whole, like, megaphoned yelling kind of thing over, like, cinematic beats is a very Sean Combs maneuver. Again, weird that Jay-Z is returning to the H-Town flow again on this record, because, like, that flow got launched to the nation on his record, on Big Pimpin', and, like, it had its moment in the sun, like, 5 years ago. It's weird that he would pull that out now.
But he's never done that, so I guess...
But to do it, like, twice, or more than twice, like, he's done it 3 or 4 times now on this record.
I don't know, I could take or leave this song.
This almost makes me like... This is gonna sound mean. I kind of want this to be a mixtape now, where like other rappers try to like out rap each other. Because this does seem very much about their like the artistic expression of whatever it is they're going through in their lives right now. But it's not like, I don't know, it's no rapping party.
I don't know, I don't love this beat.
Nah. It occurs to me, like, I would like to hear Eminem rap over this album. Because my complaint about Eminem is always that I think he's a tremendous MC, and I hate him as a producer. Like, his beats are so boring, I can't stand them.
Yeah, he also needs to stop, like, I agree that he is obviously, like, he's got a talented mouth.
Yeah.
But I'm less impressed with his brain, not just because I don't like his production, but, like, he needs to stop rapping about the same three things. Like, yeah. I know you went to rehab. I know you hate Kim. I know you love your daughter. Like, write another song.
Yeah. Do you have a complicated relationship with your celebrity status?
Like, at least those songs are funny, though.
Yes. Yes.
I don't mean to expect too much from our rappers, because honestly, I've enjoyed this record so far. Yeah. These guys are talented. I kind of like that they're not trying to out-rap each other. Like, they're not trying to be fancy just because there's another person there that they have to prove themselves to.
Yeah. Murder to excellence.
I already kind of like this. You know who else would kind of like this?
Irv.
My dad. My dad loves the acoustic guitars in hip-hop songs.
Yep. Oh, your dad is gonna like this.
Oh.
He sings. This is what 60-year-old Jewish doctors like about rap music.
But I like when there are voices in the sample or that are not singing, like they're just being, well, I mean, she's singing. They're not saying anything lyrically, like their voice is just being used as another instrument.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, I have to say, what I was just about to complain about was that, you know, I'm definitely guilty of expecting too much from our hip-hop stars, and that I think that, like, Kanye and Jay-Z specifically, but many rappers in general, are sort of at their best when they're being personal.
Yeah.
And when they're talking about their feelings or their specific experience. Now, Jay-Z cannot talk about slinging rock anymore. The man is, like, 42 years old. Like,
and he hasn't done that in 25 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's only so much that we, in the middle of a recession, want to hear him rap about his cars.
Right.
So I think it's a tough balance there, right, between, like, expressing his truth, which is that he has a lot of cars and a hot wife.
Yeah.
And still being, like, true to himself about who he is now. But, you know, I mean, you taught in schools. Little kids take these songs for serious. And I just wish people would actually rap about some, like, you know how we're always saying, like, there are so many more have-nots. If they all, like, got together and rose up against the haves would be fucked. Like, I feel like these are two guys who could really, like, say things to spark people's consciousness.
Right.
And, like, up until that song, they had not. And it was kind of nice to hear them talk about, like, black-on-black murder, police brutality. Yeah. Like, something that's actual newsworthy event.
Though, I mean, even celebrating their success, though, is part of the grander narrative of hip-hop. Like, we made it out. And like, you know, that's not the way everybody gets out, but it is the way they got out.
I know, but I guess to me, like, the realest moment that Kanye ever had to me was when he said that the president didn't care about black people.
Yeah.
And it was like unscripted, and it wasn't about him, you know, unlike his whole Taylor Swift like, it was not about him or the spotlight, like, he honestly
just an expression of,
felt that way, and it was true, because the president did not care about black people. Yeah. And I feel like when he and Jay-Z have a platform to be political, they don't have to make entirely political records, but it's nice if they can slip some of that in, because I think it's incredibly powerful coming from them.
Yeah.
As opposed to coming from, like, a backpack rapper who, like, only raps about injustice.
Yeah. So this is Made in America with Frank Ocean.
I like this. Well, to my point, I like that that song also made reference to black excellence. And...
oh, actually, that was still Murder to Excellence.
Okay.
This is Made in America with the Frank Ocean. There's about to be some yacht rock.
I did not realize Sweet Baby Jesus was made in America.
I knew the Mormons felt that way.
So there's his story.
Now, the other thing. What was that?
Did you hear that? He said South Park had them all laughing.
Oh.
Like
the
I guess Kanye.
Dave Fish.
Yeah, not very good at taking a joke.
Totally forgot what I was going to say.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I just know how much you love the Gay Fish.
It's true. That was a very good episode. Just get the joke, man. Just get it. There's a strange amount of baby Jesus.
Yeah, like more than I'm comfortable with. Did he just give it up for his grandma's banana pudding? Because yeah. That is the cutest thing ever.
I remember what I was going to say. So the other thing that Jay-Z did recently was that book he wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very good. But a lot of it was about, you know, his autobiographical experiences in the drug trade at low levels. And something that he pointed out that is true and that is in the songs, but we don't hear or pay attention to those lyrics as much, are that, like, at the low levels of the crack trade, it's a really, like, you're working 16 hours a day and getting paid basically $3 an hour. Like, it's really bad pay at the bottom end of the scale. So in that sense, actually, it's no different than any other industry in America at this point, where, like, 90% of the people working in it are just kind of fucked and hoping they can break into that top 10% who's making a lot of money. But it's a long time of making no money or, like, next to nothing. So, with that in mind, I think, like, the less a rapper, like, glorifies being in the trade, the more likely it is that they actually did it.
Right.
Because, like, if you did it, you know, then you had to endure a lot of years of being low on the totem pole, and just, like, being cold and miserable all the time.
Because
mm-hmm. that's what he described, just, like, waiting out for 12 hours, like, in the middle of nowhere at, like, a really remote spot where you never know if you're going to get, like, run up on by police or beat up by someone else, and just, like, freeze your ass off.
Now, in the rapped verses of this song,
yeah.
I think it has been very personal.
Yeah.
I appreciated that. But this is, like, why is Sweet Baby Jesus the star of this song?
Now, if it was ODB going, Big Baby Jesus, I can't wait, fuck that, I can't wait, then it'd be okay. Okay. So we're done with Jesus for now.
Last track.
Yeah. Why I Love You. Featuring Mr. Hudson. There's, like, a little bit of electro clash. It's like the DFA remix right here.
Mr. Hudson is British. He's one of Kanye West's, like, good music label signees. Okay. From the UK.
So, now that we've heard all of the beats on this album, it's generally, like, pretty austere.
And dark.
Yeah. It does seem like they both... This doesn't seem half-assed at all.
No.
Which is, you know, the thing you could... Based on Unfinished Business or Best of Both Worlds, the R. Kelly and Jay-Z... paired recordings.
Yes, although I think those guys hated each other.
Yeah.
You do get the feeling that these guys legitimately like each other.
And that they, like, I can tell this is the record, like, Kanye's not, like, holding back stuff to make his next record. This is what his next record is going to sound like. I'm not into his new Kanye's new enunciation. Because, like, I feel like every rapper has to have one nonsense syllable that's theirs. Like Rick Ross's is. And now
Jay-Z's is.
And Jay-Z's is. Oh, 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 it's your boy. And now Kanye's is, huh? I don't like it. Huh?
This is why I love you.
Yes, this is why I love you. And that was that.
There are, in fact, a bunch of extra bonus tracks, but I'm sure you're tired of hearing us talk.
Yeah. And we thought that this would cap off the episode well. So, overall thoughts.
Overall thoughts.
This is of the first impression.
Yeah, I liked it. I am intrigued that there's no obvious single or yeah. I mean, I guess that Beyonce song will probably be the single. It's got
maybe.
I mean, it's got Beyonce on it. Everything yeah. she does sort of turns to, I mean, her it's, own it's her own last record had no single on it, and it's got a bunch of singles.
Right.
So
right.
I think that's probably the next single.
That's true.
I think this continues the textured, bruised, abundant sound of Kanye's last record.
Yeah, a lot of man-hours going into those beats.
I think he comes off a little more like the star of this record, and Jay-Z is sort of like the elder statesman who's like come to take a picture with the new young upstart. I mean, not that he, you know, in a sportsy kind
right.
of metaphor.
No, totally.
I think there are some really cool samples in there. Which I looked up because it was bothering me about what some of them were. I knew I recognized that Why I Love You sample, which is a song by Cassius. And there's a New Day is built on that Nina Simone.
Right.
Feeling Good. So I think there's interesting use of samples. There's Quincy Jones sample, James Brown sample, Syl Johnson sample, Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah.
But in a way that is a through line from Kanye's early sort of soul sample work. Like, this is not a bunch of sped up soul samples. And aside from Otis, they're like much more hidden
right.
samples.
And it's not like he just puts a new drum track on an old song and calls it his. Yeah.
I suspect that there will be a lot of criticism. Again, I'm really excited to actually go read the reviews now. I suspect that there will be criticism that it is not tour de force rapping
right.
from either of them. And I suspect that people are going to think that all of their sort of... people are going to be hung up on the luxury rapping of it. Given the current economic climate, it's going to make them seem a little tone deaf. Although, I have to say that I'm surprised by how introspective a lot of the lyrics, from what I could grab on first listen, actually seem to me.
Which is sort of the least thing, or the least obvious thing that you would expect from a superstar collaboration, something introspective and soul searching.
What about your initial thoughts?
I'm just wondering how much the record's fine. I just wonder how much I will care about it in a couple of years, which, you know, is the silliest. It's not the silliest, but it is one of the like oldest critics' questions. Like, will I care about this in 5 years? But I do. You know, is how much is it just a function of like these are two of the biggest people in the world right now, and it's what they're doing. How they've released it has so much anticipation and build up. I'm not gonna remember any specific song later tonight until, I mean, you know, first impression. So I like some of these might grow on me, and there's a lot of like texture there and a lot of interesting material, but nothing has like reached out and grabbed me as an instantly memorable, like, I will forever know where I was when I listened to this because we've recorded it. But I don't know. I just wonder if this is, because I'm thinking about it as an event record,
right?
You know, since we were saying before we listened to it that there aren't that many of them anymore. Like, is this kind of a non-event? good enough. It's not bad, and it is great artists doing their best work at the moment. But is it something that is going to matter? Like, is it going to matter next year that this happens?
Yeah, I don't know if it will either. I don't know if that matters, because I think maybe what I'm responding to in this first listen is that it's a non-event record to me.
Yeah.
That it's two huge stars getting together and making a, like, kind of weird, kind of arty, kind of deflated sounding record piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure they could have gotten together and made like 10 killer fucking party jams that would be played on every radio station this summer. But I think because this was less their own record and was less a commercial prospect that had to have their stamp on it, it could be more like an artistic experiment to like try something out with a friend.
Yeah.
And so to me, maybe that is the success of the record, is that it doesn't feel like a winner or like a home run out of the park. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I was also thinking, like, as far as where it's situated in either of these men's careers, like, for Kanye, is this the Amnesiac to Beautiful Dark's Kid A? Like, is this sort of the B-sides of the material that's been kicking around in his head over these last 18 months or whatever? And does it, like, point... Is this a signpost to what his next effort is going to be like? I think a full analysis of this record will only make sense when he has a new record.
Fair enough.
Or maybe I'll like listen to it a bunch of times and one of those beats will grow on me enough. I mean, because there's a lot to hear, and I'm sure I didn't catch it all the first time because we were talking.
Yeah.
The over my overwhelming thought right now is that it's not overwhelming.
I would agree with that.
And that's fine. So we'll see how we feel about it. Maybe like the next time we chime in, we'll have like return to the throne.
Yeah, and feel free to leave a comment on the website or send us an email or tweet at us at I Do Lost Causes.
That's right, IDO Lost Causes.
If you have an idea for an upcoming show, or you'd like to be a guest, or you want to vehemently disagree with us, or you think this record is like the best thing since sliced bread, or the worst thing since George Bush's presidency, like, feel free.
Those are good bests and worsts.
Sliced bread is pretty awesome.
I'm just thinking of the range of human emotion between George Bush's presidency and sliced bread.
But please, it's always good to hear from people. And we will try and be better about our recording schedule.
Yes. Over and out. Till next time.